Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Patchy Valley Fog, Please Drive Carefully show. This is the standard fall weather report for Moorhead State Public Radio and many stations across the eastern part of the state. And so I thought, well, let's talk about Patchy Valley Fog. I wondered, what difference does it make if there's fog? Is that a more dangerous situation? So we created a show with that title. And because...
So it was a slow week for you.
Because he is a very tolerant individual. I've got a guy from UK who came on the show with me because he'll pretty much do anything I ask him to do.
Yeah, at your request, we must
Right. That's right. I'm being realistic
by invitation
time.
Only.
Look, do you want me to call security? Is that what you're going for here?
Do you really want to broadcast that there's no security here?
From the University of Kentucky, the manager of communications infrastructure, to tell you about our secure web presence with guaranteed no viruses.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. Rick sure. Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the shows. WMKY.org. That's right. That's Moorhead State Public Radio's wonderful website. Jump over there. Listen to the, or do some searching on that site. You'll find the Health Matters show listed. Man, it's okay if you look at some of those other shows as well. Just make sure you finally end up at Health Matters on their page, and you'll see a list of all the more recent shows, give you a little summary, give you a link to the audio. Listen to shows over and over again. Maybe you heard a part of a show that, you know, you wanted to get the beginning of it or the end of it. You know, maybe while we were talking, you nodded off to sleep and, you know, you need to finish that segment. You know, there's all kinds of reasons why you might want to go back and listen to the audio. Certainly right there on WMKY.org, you will find that link to the audio. After that, we've made you mad. We've upset you, and now it's time that you want to complain. We don't suggest you complain to our bosses because, frankly, they don't care that you're complaining about us. We suggest you go to facebook.com/HMRadioShow, like that page even though you don't like it.
Then you can complain as a friend. You can
exactly.
Say, yeah, I'm your friend. I like you, but I really am upset about your grapefruit show.
Do you ever wonder about the whole conjunction thing? I mean, I like you, but I like you and I like you or... When you start doing these things, there's the what's next part always drives me nuts.
Right. If I say to my wife, honey, you know I love you.
But.
It's just automatically, that is not the good way to start the conversation. I'm basically about to start a fight, and I know it, but I feel.
You got to have finished.
Yeah. We got to get it taken care of. So honey, I love you.
If you want to go there, if you want to like us, be our friend, but give us some constructive criticism, facebook.com/HMRadioShow is your opportunity to interact with us. And for those of you who actually may find us intriguing or possibly even like the show, then, hey, there's a little like button there. You can follow us. We'll give you some of the tidbits of what's going to be on the show. We'll give you a little preview of what's coming out on the show. Sometimes there's information that comes across our desks that gets posted or shared to that Facebook page so that you can kind of see some interesting things that may or may not find their way onto the show. And then maybe there's just something you want to ask us about or hear about on the show. That is how you get those comments to us. We do actively look at those pages. We actively follow them. No, we're not too big for our britches. Well, proverbial.
Spiritually, mentally, no. Physically, another matter.
Yeah, yeah. We've done that show already. So certainly jump on over to facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for today's show.
We have a sponsor this week?
Yes.
So you weren't that lazy.
Well, the Vaccination League.
Oh.
Our favorite sponsor.
The Old Faithful.
That's right. The Vaccination League. Reminding you, don't be late. Vaccinate. Vaccination, the all-natural way to prevent influenza and other diseases of fall and winter without resorting to harsh chemical vitamins or antibiotics. That's right. Vaccination, like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle. Reminding you, the CDC recommends everyone over age 6 months, unless there is an exception or contraindication, should receive a flu vaccine, preferably by October. And Rick, I will tell you, I don't have my flu vaccine yet at the time we record this, but I will have it by the time this show airs.
Yeah, that's what you say.
Oh, absolutely.
No, but then again, you know.
Well, I start with employee health, and if I can't get to employee health, I just drive by somewhere and get it. I mean, this is for me. It's a rite of fall. It is carving your pumpkin. It is setting up your corn shucks. It is putting a bale of straw.
Isn't it dealing with your firewood?
Yeah, getting the firewood ready.
Do you have your firewood ready this year?
No, it's been a tough. I mean, I haven't done the flu vaccine. I haven't done the firewood. I am not ready for the upcoming winter.
So, if you get sick and you're stuck at home, you're going to be cold.
Yeah, pretty much. Last year, I did fall on the ice in January, and that sort of messed up my routine pretty badly.
Did it at least crack the ice?
I don't know. Cracked my ankle. Back to the CDC.
Goodness.
Everyone over 6 months of age, unless you have contraindication, should be vaccinated. That includes and especially applies to pregnant women. It turns out that that is a great thing to do for your unborn child, to get an influenza vaccine to protect you and your child and your baby from influenza. For young children ages 2 to 8, there is a preference for the nasal spray. It works a little better in children age 2 to 8 than the injections. Plus, I will be honest with you, kids 2 to 8 do not like getting a shot, so that's not a bad idea. If your child has had asthma or wheezing, a history of egg allergies, is on aspirin, or has had anti-influenza medications, that's a bad idea. Otherwise, that nasal spray is a pretty good thing, and you can take it up to age 49 as well. For the rest of us, the injection is the thing. People over age 65, there is a high-dose influenza vaccine. Talk to your doctor. It contains 4 times the usual amount of antigen that produces a stronger immune response. You still can get the flu if you get vaccinated, but it will certainly make it pass. As a matter of fact, Rick, this last year was a very bad match, and we worried that maybe it was ineffective. It wasn't totally ineffective, even though it didn't match the existing flu strain. There were lower rates of hospitalization and lower rates of severe illness in people who got vaccinated. So even when it doesn't match like it didn't last year, there's still some benefits. When it does match, and so far this year, it has matched very well, there are even greater benefits.
So that's what's driving you to go get this shot.
Well, yeah.
You want to be part of the match process.
Myself and for my patients. I think it's important. And for my
family. Do you have patients?
Yes.
Really?
Not with you, but...
You did raise three kids, so you should have plenty
of
patients.
I have plenty of patients, and I also have some of the TS type of patients, and I think they deserve protection from influenza. I don't want to bring that into their household. So we talked about, so that's our sponsor, the Vaccination League, reminding you, don't be late, vaccinate. It is time for the fall flu shot. We talked about fog, and I have wondered, I hear this practically every morning in the fall, Apache Valley fog, which if you're in Eastern Kentucky, it's one of the reasons why I moved here. It is absolutely beautiful, this thick layer of fog that forms in the valleys. You're up on the ridgetops. You can see this stuff rolling. It rises a little bit, and you can drive in underneath it. It's beautiful. You're going to work in the morning. You see that.
Absolutely. And then on top of that, I'm a private pilot. So when you take off in the morning and you look down, you'll see the fog laying in the valleys.
It's beautiful.
And so, yeah, you can see the green mountains above and the fog in the valley. It's really beautiful until you've got to realize that your airport you're trying to get to is down below.
It's fogged in. There's a slight problem. They actually did some research in England looking at people with emphysema and lung disease. People who lived in the valleys had a higher rate of hospitalizations than people who lived on the ridges. And they theorized that perhaps some of the air pollution, the particulate matter, got caught up in that fog. So if you or someone you love has respiratory problems, you might actually consider moving out of the valleys, because that fog, unfortunately, does bad things for your lungs. But as far as traffic goes, it turns out that there is, first of all, there's about 2% of all fatalities involve foggy roads, fog or smoke. In fog, you're more commonly involved in head-on collisions and multi-car pileups.
Ouch.
So, I mean, well, dead is dead. I mean, it's 2% overall, and probably about 2% of the time you're driving in fog. I'm not sure it is a particularly deadly environmental hazard. Frankly, you know, you do slow down in the fog, so you're less likely to get killed that way. But, you know, the decline in visibility is not very good. They mentioned if you have high, narrowly placed rear, if your car has back-end lights are high and narrowly placed, it makes people think you're farther away.
Right.
So you need low brake lights, widely spaced, so people will pay attention to you. The other thing is, we've all seen in some parts of the mountains where they've put in stripes and reflectors to try to remind you where the lanes are. Rumble strips also in the center lane work well. That's on the mountain parkway.
Right.
To try to avoid those head-on collisions that occur because people get lost and out of their lane in heavy fog. So there's a couple of things you can do, but in general, about 2% of all fatalities involve foggy roads. Not a good thing to do. I've never had a foggy wreck, although I've
drank a foggy bottom. That's a local beer in the Georgetown, you know, Washington, D.C. area.
I wasn't sure where that was going, but okay.
It was, really. There's a whole area there called Foggy Bottom.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. You could say Apache Valley, Foggy Bottom. I mean, you know, there's enough valley in Washington, D.C., Bethesda, that whole Georgetown area where, you know, you could make that work.
Okay. I don't know where this is going.
We're not supposed to.
Okay.
It's a foggy
it's
bottom.
It's foggy. That's true. You have no idea how can you tell where anything's going in the fog.
Drive carefully,
Tony. This is a foggy show.
Hey, look, if you don't prep, neither am I.
Okay, fair enough. This was September 24th. It's old, but I wanted to get this on the air. The 15 most obese states in America.
Why do we got to talk about this again? Haven't we taken enough punishment?
Well, this is not as bad a news. I mean, anytime Kentucky's not number one, you have to be fairly happy. I realize I have a very low bar set here, but let's go up the 15 most obese states in the United States. At number 14-15, it's a tie between Tennessee and Wisconsin. Now, you would think that each one of them has 31.2% obesity rates. I just did not.
31.2%,
a tie, 14 and 15, Tennessee and Wisconsin. Next up at number 13, Kansas with a 31.3.
Don't you think it would probably be best if you were Tennessee or Wisconsin, don't you think you'd lobby for one more decimal point?
Yeah, just to see. Let's break the... It's a photo finish, but my gosh, that's what we do.
Let's go one more decimal point so that we can settle this argument.
Let's weigh some people and see what happens. Kansas, number 13 at 31.3%. Again, the 15 worst. Number 12 is Kentucky at 31.6%. We are the 12th worst state. That is a high ranking for the state of Kentucky.
I was going to say, we're normally in the top five.
Yeah, it's almost like it's a perverse sense of pride. Now, one thing about it, we smoke so much that we tend to have lower rates of obesity. Not a good thing, but we do. Number 11, Texas. 31.9%.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would have been another southern, you know.
I don't know. I got that Texas Ranger thing going on. I didn't think they had that big of obesity rates. But, again, they do. Number 10, South Carolina. Understand that. 32.1%. Number 9, surprisingly, North Dakota. We'll be talking about North Dakota.
Yeah, that is really odd.
Yeah. Why is North Dakota obese? Well, I mean, I'm not particularly fond of North Dakota.
Do you eat when you're depressed?
Do you eat when it's dark outside? Do you eat when you can't? I don't know. Number 8, Ohio. That's right. Worse than Kentucky. Worse than North Dakota. Ohio, 32.6.
Would you have bet that? Would you have believed that?
No, that's the thing that's amazing about this. Number 7 is Indiana at 32.7%. Oklahoma kept number 6, 33%. Then you get the usual suspects. Alabama, number 5, at 33.5%. Louisiana, number 4, 34.9%. Mississippi, number 3, at 35.5%. Now, Mississippi has held down the number 1 spot for quite some time, so that's a little unusual. Number 2, West Virginia, 35.7%. And the number 1 highest obesity rate in the country, according to the State of Obesity, Better Policies for a Healthier America, a report. This is the Trust for America's Health and the Robert Woods Johnson Foundation. The worst state in the nation is Arkansas at 35.9%. And again, we've got a lot of southeastern states there, punctuated by Indiana, Ohio, North Dakota, and Texas for no obvious reason, and Wisconsin. But Kentucky comes in at number 12, a better than usual ranking. We don't get many rankings above the bottom 10, to be honest.
No. That's why the data's suspect to me.
Rick,
you better take some time and look that over.
Kentucky doesn't. We're going to do a recount here and try to break the tie there at number 15. Why don't you take a break as well? You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio. Stay tuned for our second fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Apache Valley Fog Drive Carefully Show. Our salute to the Fall Daily Weather Report, reminding us that, yes, the Appalachian Mountains are foggy
so
in the fall.
Do you, in fact, every day look at the weather report?
I listen to Moorhead State Public Radio religiously because I want to stay informed and be a part of my community, and they give a weather report.
What are you saying?
Always Apache Valley Fog.
What are you saying? You're saying yes. So the answer to that was yes.
Yes. I get a weather report every day from Moorhead State Public Radio, one of the many services that they give. Why not send in a donation?
So what are you saying, Tony? You don't always listen to the radio, but when you do, it's Moorhead State Public Radio.
Nicely
is that what you're saying?
Rick. Nicely done, Rick.
The most interesting co-host in the world.
Our sponsor. For the second time, the vaccination day, remind you, don't be late. Vaccination, the all-natural way to avoid influenza.
What happened to the 23-gauge needle?
Vaccination, like Mother Nature with 23-gauge. Now, what do I mean by that? This is the point. You can take vitamins, which are chemically made. They are not the same things that occur in nature. They are close, but because they are made via chemical reaction, they simply are not the same. The vitamin E is, I believe, a gamma tocopherol instead of an alpha tocopherol. There is a difference between these things that are made chemically. You could take those chemicals. You could take either antivirals or antibiotics. They're chemicals. Or you could simply show an incapacitated virus to your immune system and let yourself build a natural response. It's a weird thing, but actually, injecting yourself with a vaccine is a more natural process involving using your own body's defenses than is taking vitamins. And that is something that we've been trying to sell here on Health Matters for years. Vaccination is, in fact, a very natural thing to do. It is like getting a mild form of an infection. We give you that, let your immune system handle it, which it can easily do, and then it is ready in case a more severe form tries to take over. Fun facts about influenza vaccination. CDC, number one, CDC recommends everyone ages 6 months or older have the flu vaccine, preferably by October. Fun fact number two, they have a trivalent and quadrivalent. What that means is there is one vaccine that protects against three strains, one protects against four strains. They are both available. We prefer the four strain for obvious reasons, but if you can't get it, the three strain is pretty darn good. Don't delay looking for that four strain quadrivalent vaccine. There is no preference. Fun fact number three, the CDC does not have a preference between the routes of administration. That is, if you are eligible for the nasal spray, the flu mist, then that's perfectly fine with them, as long as they're, again, there's no one in the household that is immune suppressed. You're not immune suppressed. You don't have asthma. You're not taking aspirin therapy and so forth. That's perfectly fine. But you can also get the either the intradermal vaccine that's given as a bump under your skin, the old plain old intramuscular vaccine, and certainly if you are a senior, consider that high dose, Fluzone high dose influenza vaccine. It apparently induces a better response in people over age 65. And then finally, the CDC wants to remind you, you can get vaccinated, you can still get the flu. It is quite possible to get influenza after vaccination. Hopefully it will be a milder disease experience than it would be if you hadn't had vaccination, but it is not an absolute lock protection against influenza. It simply helps your immune system get ready for the illness. That's our sponsor, the Vaccination League, reminding you, don't be late. Vaccinate, time for the fall flu shot. If you haven't got it, you need to get it soon. You want to have this vaccine on board for Thanksgiving when you gather together with your family and exchange viruses. Now, I wasn't going to bring this one on the air, Rick.
Oh, yes, you.
No, I really wasn't.
Why did you bring it then?
Because it had some good recommendations. I liked this, so I wanted to mention it.
So you knew you were going to mention it?
Yeah, but all right, here's why I didn't want to bring it on the air. You are so much fun to have around. It makes me seem illogical, even though I'm logically saying something here.
Okay.
You make it seem illogical by interjecting random comments that makes me look like I don't know what I'm talking about.
You don't look like anything to everybody. You listen.
Makes me sound
hear.
Like. All right. Here's the thing. The thing was this was the Annals of Emergency Medicine. Rare injuries observed with EpiPen administration. You know, if you or someone you love is having a severe allergic reaction, you basically jab yourself with an EpiPen. Right. Okay. But you can
epinephrine,
get,
right?
Right. Even, epinephrine. Yeah. It's a shot of adrenaline, which may be life-saving if you have a severe allergic reaction. And people carry these things with them. Now, they're auto-injectors, meaning you plunge them in and they do the injections anyway. But they've caused lacerations. The needle is broken off and so forth. It's very rare. And so I wasn't going to bring it on the air because, you know, let's worry about a lot of stuff. We don't really need to worry about this because it's very rare. But they had some recommendations on how to use an EpiPen, and I thought this was pretty good. To prevent injury, here's what the author suggests. Number one, if it's a small child, restrain the child's leg during administration. That is, don't reach over and jab a needle into the child's leg without restraining the leg. The problem is that if the child moves, then you get a laceration, you get a bent needle, that sort of thing. So it's important to hold the child's leg down so that they don't move during the injection. It's not on the auto-injector labels, but they strongly recommend you restrain them. The other thing is, hold it against your leg, against the leg, remove the cap, and then push it against the thigh. Currently, the manufacturers recommend swinging the device and firmly pushing it in the thigh. This is what you see on the TV shows. It's very dramatic. The person plunges the needle into their thigh.
Right.
I said, you don't have to do that. All you got to do is just push it. You don't have to slam it like it's a knife or something like that.
Right.
And so you don't have to do it that violently.
But it does look pretty cool.
It does, but it may be more force than you need, actually, to do the injection.
So you're going
to
leave a bruise.
Yeah, and you may go a little deeper than you need to, and again, problem. And then finally, leave the needle in for as little time as possible. The manufacturer recommends holding it against the thigh for 10 seconds, but the authors say, Look, you're going to get the medicine in around 3 seconds. And it is tough to hold a small child, especially still, for 10 seconds. Remember, 3 seconds is going to get most of it in. If the child really gets anxious and starts moving against you, you can pull it out in less than 10 seconds. You'll still be fine. And then the other thing is never reinsert the needle. Never, 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 ever reinsert the needle. Do it once. That's what you're going to get. Make sure you do it like you mean it and make sure that you hold it in long enough to deliver the medicine, because the second time around is not going to go well. That is a nice summary of how to safely manage an EpiPen. Next up, something that Rick knows a lot about, and I'm not being facetious here, this is about sleep.
I am efficient.
You are an efficient sleeper. Rick has...
I don't do it in great quantities, but when I do it, I'm efficient.
Man, am I going to get some sleep. After... what? Well, your bedtime. I mean, you're working up to 1 or 2 in the morning.
Working's a strong word, but I am awake until I usually go to bed between 12 and 1. That's a fair assessment.
Okay.
Sometimes, you know, it's right at that 12:30 mark.
The average American gets about 8.5 hours of sleep on a typical weekday.
I am way below that.
Says the Washington Post. Average American, 8.5 hours of sleep. So again, 1 o'clock in the morning is just simply, unless you have a very unusual job, you're not going to get your 8.5 hours. This was on the Washington Post, October 7th, but a lot of us get a lot less sleep than that. People who work long hours get less sleep, and it turns out that your social and economic status makes a difference. Poorer Americans get less sleep than richer ones. That's a bit of a surprise.
Yeah,
you have that thought that you're working really hard, you're obsessed with making money, you have your financial empire may be collapsing, you got to worry about a bunch of stuff, you stay up late, and you work these tremendously long hours. It turns out, though, that the poorer Americans have, and we've done surveys now. This was published in the journal Sleep Health. Researchers at Penn, at University of Pennsylvania, they looked at the 2009. Now, this is pretty old, but this is the most recent one they could get this data and compile it. The Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey, which we call it the BRFS, they asked 400,000 people during the past 30 days, how many days have you felt you did not get enough rest or sleep? They separated them into two categories, poor sleep on fewer than 15 days, poor sleep on more than 15 days. 15 days, this is how you diagnose insomnia in the first place, so that was their criteria. And they looked at about two-thirds of U.S. counties, and they compiled a map of where the poor sleep was. Now, the problem with this map is the poor sleep, the center of the poor sleep universe, is in fact located over the Appalachian Mountains in eastern Kentucky and West Virginia. Low socioeconomic status, poor health status, and extremely poor sleep status. I said, you know, you'd think that maybe in the urban areas, that's where the poor sleep is. And again, remember, they asked people out of the past month, how many days did you feel you did not get enough rest or sleep? So it may be that the people in the cities are sleeping less, but they feel they get enough. You think you get enough?
No, I don't think I get enough.
You would answer the question then, if somebody asked you, how many days in the past month did you not get enough sleep? You would say
all of them.
Every. Okay. It's good that you're honest on that. So you'd be right up there with the poor sleepers.
Well, I mean, you know, every once in a while I get a weekend day, usually a Saturday, where I can sleep in. Now let's define sleeping in. Sleeping in is, you know, probably 8:30, you know? I mean, that's not, I know some people who sleep in until 10 or 11.
Well, that just doesn't happen as you get older. I'm here to report to you. You can't sleep in all morning
Go to bed at 2 a.m. and then come talk.
Well, I've
gotten home after UK football games. We have to work the football games. I've gotten home at 2 and 3 in the morning. You're wound up. You try to get to sleep. You finally get to sleep around 4. Pretty easy to sleep till 10 or 11 then.
Okay.
So, yeah, it does happen, you know, but the funny thing is this band that I wear, this Microsoft band, you can actually go in and look in list form of each night's detected, and, you know, in some cases I tell it I'm going to sleep, so it actually makes an official start and stop time. The rest of the time it detects it based on the biometrics. And, I mean, I can watch. I mean, my you know, 5 hours and 24 minutes, 5 hours and 44 minutes, 6 hours and 15 minutes, 6 hours and 20 minutes. It's never 7. And think one time on vacation, it was 8. I certainly don't sleep enough, but I don't know. I'm okay, I think.
In Appalachian,
maybe
Kentucky,
you don't.
Ohio. Well, I don't know how I would report that. That's the interesting thing. The thing about the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Study that's fascinating is it does actually, people's opinions affect it. So again, they didn't ask you how many hours you got. They said, did you get enough? And in eastern Kentucky, West Virginia, the western tip of Virginia, Tennessee, and Ohio, in that Appalachian Mountain counties, and those up to 50% of people said, I didn't get enough sleep, at least half the time in the previous month. There were a number of cold spots where people absolutely always slept well. Wisconsin, Northern Virginia, And again, Northern Virginia is going to be up in the D.C. areas. People say, I'm sleeping fine. I'm getting as much sleep as I want. They looked at social and demographic factors to see if anything correlated. What about obesity, income, education, drinking rates, overall physical and mental health? Relatively younger individuals with lower socioeconomic status and poorer health were the most likely to live in what they called the hotspot counties. That is, if you are younger and poorer, you have a sense that you're not getting enough sleep. Fascinating thing is, obviously, Arkansas and Mississippi, the places that have the highest rates of obesity, and you would think that would affect their breathing. Sleep apnea at nighttime could be a problem. Not in the top counties. The top counties, in fact, are in eastern Kentucky and West Virginia. Now, if you want to get some sleep, all right, here's the worst counties. Jasper County, Texas, 78% said they didn't get enough sleep. Freestone County in Texas, 67%. Cleburne County, Texas, 67%. Cleburne County, Alabama, 63%. Greene County, Pennsylvania, 57%. Clay County, Illinois, 56%. Bourbon County, Kentucky, 54% of the citizens of Bourbon County said, we're not getting enough to sleep. Claiborne and Campbell County in Tennessee came in next. Cook County and Bartow County, Georgia, all with over 50% of their respondents saying, we are not getting enough sleep. Best counties in the country? Jasper County, Georgia. Everybody sleeps well in Jasper County, Georgia.
You got to wonder about stuff like that. Does that mean the community is too small? Does it mean it's too... I don't know. Is there minimums? What's the minimum population?
You're asking about population. Let me just go to this. Martinsville, Virginia, 0% poor sleep. Manassas, Virginia. Colonial Heights, Virginia. Charlottesville, Virginia, 0% reporting poor sleep. Charlottesville is not... I mean, it's not a metropolis, but my goodness, that's a big enough community that you expect somebody out there is staying up at night.
Wow.
Wilbarger County in Texas, Washington County, Texas, Scurry County, Texas, Pecos County, Texas, Medina and Madison County, all in Texas, 0%. So, you know, Texas has both the best and the worst. And I think there's a pretty big income disparity in Texas, obviously a big state that might have something to do with that, but it is odd. California does not appear anywhere on this list, good or bad, which is, in my mind, pretty interesting. I thought they were staying up all night. They may be staying up all night, but they may be perfectly fine with it. It's really hard to know. I got a little financial thing, Rick. I'm not very good at healthcare finance, but I wanted to mention this. This were a couple of headlines that got buried in the news, and I thought we ought to talk about it on Health Matters. This was October 1st. The Affordable Care Act, when it was created, they had something called Risk Corridor Market Stabilization Programs. And the idea was there, if you're an insurer and you're trying to figure out how to participate in the Affordable Care Act and offer policies, you're not sure exactly whether or not you're going to be able to afford it. So they had something called Risk Corridors. The government plan on releasing that data in August, but waited until October 1st because of discrepancies. And the idea was the government would back up money that plans that lost money on exchanges to allow them a one-time shot at trying to balance their books and stabilize their prices. Well, the thing is, the government did not come through on its obligation to the insurers. Now, I'm not a big fan I think insurers should know what they're getting into, but these were some smaller health insurers and startup plans, and they were counting on the government to help them out if they did not, and let's use it, the government to bail them out if they were not able to sell plans at the proper rates when they first started off.
Right.
So they looked at the Affordable Care Act, said, we could get into this. The government will take care of problems we have if we don't do our calculations right initially. We get a one-time bailout, and in fact, the government shorted that bailout by $2.5 billion.
Did you ever short something by that much?
Hang on a second. Let me think. No, not even close. The thing is, you feel like you got to keep your obligations. Now, again, this is the stalemate between Republicans and Democrats in Congress that the feds decided to withhold those funds. And what that means is, as of October 2nd, the Kentucky Health Cooperative announced they were going out of business at the end of the calendar year. They will not offer health insurance plans in Kentucky in 2016 because...
they're not making money.
Yeah, and they were relying on that bailout to stabilize their finances so they could continue offering policies at a different rate now, but they're not able to. Now, that Kentucky Health Cooperative, this is not United Health. This is not Anthem Blue Cross. This is not even Humana. This was a tiny health cooperative limited to Kentucky that was trying as a startup to be a cooperative. That is, they're not trying to take care of their stockholders or their CEO. They actually were supposed to be a more competitive model, a streamlined model, just like other co-ops that really was consumer-oriented. The problem is they got caught in the federal debate over bailout funding, and in fact, they lost, and so they're going out of business.
You know, it is kind of tragic, Tony, that you know, you kind of put your faith in that, and you put your kind of business plan in that, and then it falls through all this. It's a bad spot to be in.
Well, and you have done this as well. It's tough doing business with the federal government.
We do it every year. Every year we try to do our business with them, and we try to settle up at the end of April or the middle of April, and it's usually not fun.
Yeah, and if you stay out, you miss out on tremendous opportunity. But if you go in, political change, climate change, things like that can happen, and all of a sudden you find that the very funds that you depended upon to make your business work are not there.
It's really funny. It's that devil you know theory, right?
Absolutely.
So going and changing things, you know, it sometimes, or asking for change sometimes can get you. And I don't know. It's a shame we're going to have like 14 months left in this presidential election, because my goodness, they're getting nowhere fast. They're getting absolutely nowhere fast. And do you really think they're going to solve any medical problems in the next 14 months?
Medical problems or other problems?
Well, medical financial problems. I mean, yeah. Are they going to solve any of these administrative rules, oversights? I mean, you know, I'm amazed that the ICD-10 codes went into effect so close to the presidential election.
Well, they were delayed a year. They were actually supposed to be last year, and a delay was one, but all the people who worked so hard on getting ready for them were so incensed at their losses that they really held the day, and they're now in place. But you're right. I mean, they're supposed to be actually in place in 2014 rather than 2015. We're supposed to be taking a break.
Glad you noticed.
You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Stay tuned for our third and final fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Apache Valley Fog Drive Carefully Show. Our salute to
will do.
Standard daily weather report in the Appalachian Mountains in the fall, heard over Morehead State Public Radio virtually every morning in October. Our sponsor for the final time, the Vaccination League, reminding you, don't be late, vaccinate. Vaccination, the all-natural way to take care of influenza. Vaccination like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle.
There we go.
CDC recommends everyone age 6 months or older, with rare exceptions, get the flu vaccine preferably by October. There is a trivalent and quadrivalent, as we mentioned. The trivalent, 3 strains of flu, the quadrivalent, 4. We prefer the 4 if you can get it. There is not as much difference as you might think. The trivalent, the 3 most common, and it does fairly well at stimulating your immune system. The CDC has not expressed a preference between routes of vaccine administration for adults, with a few exceptions. Don't delay for the quadrivalent. Go ahead and get the vaccine you can get now. Recommendation for young children. Starting last year, if your child is age 2 to 8, they recommend the nasal spray unless the child has had asthma or wheezing during the past 12 months, immunosuppressed, egg allergy, receiving aspirin, or on anti-flu medications. Those would make FluMist, the nasal spray, a worse choice. Children ages 6 months to 8 years who have never been vaccinated will require 2 doses. Be aware of that. You may not hear that, and this is something that actually came up last year. If you're getting this at an unusual location, a pharmacy, a grocery store, or so forth, good for you. But a child ages 6 months to 8 years who's never been vaccinated before, they recommend 2 doses at least 4 weeks apart for full protection. So be sure, and if you got small children, ask about that second dose. For people ages 65 or older, you can take the regular dose flu shot, or there is a high dose, Fluzone high dose, specifically for ages 65 or older, has a little bit better response, and we do recommend it for our senior citizens. And then finally, just a reminder, vaccination does not absolutely 100% protect against influenza. You can still get a case of the flu. Most of them will be milder. It does seem to lower your rates of getting pneumonia. It does seem to lower your rates of being hospitalized, and it does seem to lower your rate of transmitting the flu to the people around you, all of which are good things, but you can still certainly get the flu after you've been vaccinated. Our sponsor, the Vaccination League. Don't be late. Vaccinate. It is time for your fall flu shot. Now, Rick hates it when I talk about drugs.
Well, you shouldn't do drugs.
Grapefruit and drugs are the 2 things that will set Rick Phillips off.
But you know what? Grapefruit will set you off.
I do not like grapefruit.
I mean, yeah, come on.
Okay, let's review again. Grapefruit recruits all the salad items in its region to be honorary grapefruits.
No, it doesn't.
That taste, it permeates the whole salad. The only thing, ironically, that is not polluted by grapefruit is grape. If you have a grape right next to a grapefruit, it's a perfectly fine grape. Everything else tastes like
ruined.
Grapefruit. Yeah, ruined. Absolutely ruined. It is sour. The juice is of no obvious. It does not make me feel satisfied like orange juice.
No.
It does not make me happy.
You can only put so much sugar on it before it finally tastes good.
And you've ruined the effect of the grapefruit. And if that's not enough, it does interact with medications. But we're not talking about grapefruit here.
Well, and we're not.
We're not talking about grapefruit here.
Nope. Just talking about the other.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's one
drug.
Of the things that really irritates us is grapefruit. So here we go.
When, you know, are we ever going to let them live that down?
I don't know. The great thing is we toil here in anonymity. I don't think anybody really cares about our opinions on grapefruit, but there it is. All right, the other thing that the reason I brought this up.
Tony, are we going to have to stop and compose ourselves?
I don't know. No, we can't do it. There's no way to do that.
You know, is there anything that I can do or say that's going to make you love grapefruit?
Wow.
And the answer is?
Pay me a lot of money. I might consider it. I'll be the grapefruit spokesman. That would be a
I think you've already been. I think you've already been shut down on that front.
Yeah, I think so. There's a drug named Daraprim. Pyrimethamine, and this is a good medicine. It takes care of a couple of protozoal infections. One, malaria. It's a good anti-malarial, and it also takes care of a condition that may become very important in the future called toxoplasmosis. You know, we've talked about
now,
it.
Is that associated with cats?
That's
and
the
pregnant?
Cat. Yeah, that's
yeah.
The cat litter. Now, the thing about pregnant people is that the unborn child can be susceptible to it. Most of us, we can clean out cat litter and not have a problem because we've already been exposed. But the interesting thing is people who were exposed to toxoplasma and got an infection, it does make cysts in your brain, which is not necessarily a happy thing, and they may change your behavior. We're still working this out from a research standpoint, but keep an eye out for that. At any rate, this drug then might be important as a treatment for toxoplasmosis or malaria. It is important as a treatment, and it might become even more important if we find out that toxoplasmosis makes you do interesting changes in behavior. It's on the World Health Organization's list of essential medicine. These are the most important medications needed in basic health system. It was created by a Nobel Prize-winning scientist in America, I might add, available since 1953, and there are no patents on this drug whatsoever. It's a generic drug. It should be available at Walmart for $4 if it were that. In 2015, Turing Pharmaceuticals bought up the rights to it, and they raised the price.
How do you buy the rights to it?
They bought out the company that was making it.
Okay, great.
The one and only company that's making it. It's a generic drug. There's no money to be made there, right? So they just went ahead. There's only one company making it. They bought it. They changed the price of the pill from $13 a pill to $750 a pill.
Good if you can get it.
And they can because no one else is making it. Public outrage, especially doctors, that this is a good drug. We cannot have this sort of thing happening. They said, well, this is too much profit. They said, well, you know, we feel that this is what the market would bear, that the drug was underpriced, and now at $750 uphill, it's a better price. Martin Shkreli, and I'm sorry, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name. He's their CEO. He appeared on World News Tonight. He says, we will lower the price of it. We will respond to public opinion. The thing is, he did that on September 24th. At time we go to press, it is October 14th. It's actually $900 a pill at Walgreens and CVS.
So they've marked up the markup.
Well, in fact, yeah, they never went to $13.50, certainly. They just set a price that's more affordable. Now, first of all, I can make him out to be a bad guy and so forth. The question is, and there's a couple of quotes here that just really are interesting. There's a publication called The Daily Beast said that Shkreli was the most hated man in America. He even outranks the dentist who killed Cecil the Lion. So maybe the lion killer guy is off the hook now. He says, well, no, look, he actually tweeted some things about it. The company gives the drug away for free to people who actually need it. It needs to make a profit, and certainly raising the price to $900 a pill is a good way to make a profit, and they will use that to fund research and development on new drugs. Now, frankly, they're not bringing out any new drugs, but once you give them a few billion dollars, then perhaps they may start doing that research. It's been on the market for over 60 years. It's an ancient medicine, and there should be better treatments, says Shkreli. But here's the thing that I wanted our radio fans to realize. This is a direct quotation from the CEO, Martin Shkreli, of Turing Pharmaceuticals, the guy who jacked the price up by 5,000% for this anti-malarial drug. He says, our policies ensure that none of our patients have to pay more than 20 cents per pill out of pocket.
So in other words, they're getting their money from the insurance companies.
They're getting their money from all of us.
Right.
Right. So, yes, I mean, they have patient assistance programs. Yes, the out-of-pocket expenses are low. But the idea, the plan here is to charge insurance companies, Medicaid, Medicare Part D, and insurance benefits managers the rest of that money to make the money off of all of us rather than the few people who might need this drug.
Mm.
And I think this is a pattern that we've seen. One of the problems with creating universal health insurance like the Affordable Care Act is their pharmacy benefits are quite extravagant in one sense. And the pharmaceutical companies realize that since everyone now has that benefit, since you no longer have to pay for your medicines out of pocket, why keep the price at an affordable level? Why not just run it up and drain the insurance money rather than causing a public outcry by draining people's pockets?
Yeah. I don't know.
Any rate, a fascinating development. I think this is going to this will be something that you will see time and time again. Now that we have spent this much public funds, this much taxpayer dollars, this much insurance money on guaranteeing medication for everybody, the pharmaceutical industry will try to make that, well, they'll push that system as far as they can, and raising the price on a generic medicine for no reason from $13 a pill to now $900 a pill is, that's just the start. I mean, we'll see this with new medicines. We'll see this with existing medicines. The price of medicines is in the process of skyrocketing because, once again, we don't have to pay for this out of pocket. We're all going to be on the hook for this, and it's going to hurt us. It's going to affect our solvency of our Medicaid, Medicare programs, and so forth. Just another thing to watch out for, yeah, your friends at Health Matters.
There's no reason to be, you know, milking that system for everything it's got. It doesn't have much.
But if you have a business, I mean, let's face it, if you're a businessman and you see that huge pot of money available, and all you've got to do is just raise your rates by 5,000% to get it, as a businessman, would you not try doing that?
You know, Tony, there's an ethical question there that it's very difficult to answer. I mean, some people are legitimately going to say, absolutely.
Right.
There's a capitalist society that says, look, it's there for the taking. Let's take it. And then there's a socialist society that says, oh, you can't do that. I'm not even sure where I'm at on that because I don't think I would do that.
Well, you heard him justifying it to himself. He says, look, we're going to use that money for research. Now there's no evidence that they're
they're going to research what a house costs in the Bahamas.
I mean, honestly, you could say that, but there's really no evidence that they are. And they don't even have to. Basically, they can just say, look.
I mean, that can be dividends on stocks. I mean, right. It can be all kinds of
things. It's a generic. They don't hold a patent on it. Anybody can make the medicine. If we're so outraged, make somebody else make it. Yeah, somebody else make the medicine. As long as we're making the medicine, we're going to charge $900 a pill. And if for this medicine.
So, yeah, I don't know. Tony, you want to start a business? I know a drug we could make.
Yeah, you wonder about it. But honestly, these generic medicines, if we did start, we certainly couldn't market it for $13 a pill because we're going to have to start from scratch.
No, so anyway, if you sell it for $700, we'll do it for $500.
Yeah, that's been my standard answer. I'll come in for $650.
You got to give a better discount than that. You got to come down to $500.
Listen, I'll do volume.
The thing is, we could negotiate a deal with him to sell it to us for $400. We'll just skim $100 off each one.
Is that ethical?
You didn't ask me that.
We're a very amateur business. I mean, if we had any business sense, we wouldn't be doing a radio show. This is not where you make money. But it is.
Yeah. No, Tony. We wouldn't do a public radio.
It worked for the Car Talk guys. We got the wrong
one. Wait a minute. One of them rest in peace, but, you know.
They had talent.
They had talent, and they definitely made a little money at this.
Next up, after our failed business venture.
Well, you shouldn't have talked about drugs. I can help you with tech.
Okay.
I can help you with technology. I can't help you with drugs. I can help you bash grapefruit. I can help you bash insurance companies.
I will try to stick to your wheelhouse then. How about that?
You want to do this thing from a cell phone? I'm your guy.
Thank you for that. We certainly appreciate it.
So now, let's talk about something that's non-technical.
Okay. You're not going to like this either. But tropical diseases. This is October 10th.
I like tropical.
Well, this came from the dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor University College of Medicine. It's a press release, but still, it's a thing to think about. The southern tier United States, we're going to see these tropical diseases, things that have been heretofore mainly Central, South American, African, and so forth conditions, are now making an inroad into the United States. Dengue fever, which is a disease that can cause...
Oh, there's so many jokes there.
Yeah, I know. Sure. And we've talked about chikungunya.
Saying that. Say it again.
Chikungunya. It is a disease. Again, it is a condition, a virus illness that causes severe joint pains and muscle pains. It has been in the Caribbean now, thousands of cases reported, and now it is on the southern tier of the United States. We're seeing some transmission. The other thing to worry about is there's an Aedes aegypti. That's a very, very nasty mosquito. Carries a lot of stuff. Is now starting to be seen in the southern United States, particularly Florida and Texas. And since our climate is warming, we expect that it will establish a foothold. And at that point, that particular mosquito can carry a wealth of diseases that we do not want. In Louisiana, 10 cases of chikungunya, 1 case of dengue fever the last year. Average amount spent on public health for each resident, about $15 a year for public health. So the thing is, we're going to let these diseases get a foothold, and we don't, these states, these southern tier states, are not equipped to actually to control these diseases. So they will become endemic in the United States probably in the next 5 to 10 years. In Florida, 520 cases of chikungunya in 2014, most of them imported from the Caribbean, but there has been some transmission among Floridians. So we anticipate in the next year we'll see more of that. Tropical diseases, this is going to be a mess. It really is. I am so sorry that U.S. citizens will be exposed to that. You've always thought here, sort of mosquito repellents in many parts of the United States were kind of optional.
Right.
If you didn't want to get itchy, if you didn't want to get bit, you should probably take them. I think the thing that we've talked about on this show is there, especially if you go to the deep south in the United States or if you go to the Caribbean, you really need to protect yourself from mosquitoes.
Right.
This is no longer just a matter of comfort. It's actually a matter of public health. So I want to make that change for many of our radio fans who you felt mosquito protection was optional. In my mind, it is no longer optional when you go to the Gulf Coast. Please be very careful about that. Some good news. We will end on good news. How about that?
If you say so. Sometimes you're good news. I don't know.
Washington Post, October 7th, not a single person tested positive for Ebola in the first week of October.
What about the second week?
The three West African nations devastated by that virus, the first time that's happened since March 2014, according to the World Health Organization. Ebola killed more than 11,000 people, sparked a panic. We can say that, an actual panic in the United States during the summer 2014. Now there's a few small areas in Guinea and Sierra Leone, but no new cases on those areas. Now, you decide that an epidemic is over if no new cases are identified for 42 days. That's twice the incubation period of the virus. If we don't see anybody new, we figure that virus is not being transmitted. And we believe now that we can say, again, fingers crossed, Rick, you're right. I got this report October 7th. Haven't seen an update, but have also not heard of a case being reported. I believe we can say that Ebola, like this show, is finally over.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Hunter Reese and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just do a search on Facebook. Just look for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
toxoplasmosis is a disease that is caused by a parasite. It can be a major concern for patients with severely weakened immune systems, such as those patients living with HIV/AIDS. Other patients at risk may include pregnant women and infants.
Health Matters and acetophenamide work together to block folic acid in the parasite, which interferes with its reproduction in your body.
From the moment you listen to our show, Health Matters will be there to help educate and support you through every step.
We are committed to researching the next generation radio shows for toxoplasmosis and other conditions with the goal of improving your listening options.
Our Health Matters Direct program can assist you with Health Matters delivery, reimbursement, and financial assistance and radio support services.
For treatment of toxoplasmosis, the starting dose of Health Matters is $1,800 to $2,700 daily for 3 weeks, then $900 a day for an additional 4 to 5 weeks.
Common side effects of Health Matters include lightheadedness, insomnia, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, and thinning of the wallet.
Whatever you do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week as Rick and I discuss a smart chikungunya strategy on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.